You can catch all he's up to for USA Today via the local newsstand online, usatoday.com. Follow along on Twitter. Use the handle at George Schroeder. George, awesome time of year. How you doing?
Hey, good. How are you?
All is well here. On your post most recently on USA Today about Kansas basketball, of course, the 13th straight Big 12 title, off-court issues, the best player, Josh Jackson, facing charges of criminal property damage. He's been suspended for the first game of the Pac-12 tournament. There's some other situations. What their head coach, Bill Self, how is he able to address this? Because like we see quite often, especially in college, they're kind of limited as to what they can say.
Well, I mean, there's a little bit of limited as to what you can say, and there's a little bit of, let's say we're limited as to what we can say. You know, there's some of that that goes on, too, sometimes.
Sure.
So, but, look, the real problem for Bill Self, I think, this year was that until today, when they announced a one-game suspension for Justin Jackson over another incident where he had apparently backed his car into another car and then drove off without giving his information, until today, there'd been no public punishment for Josh Jackson at all, and of course, they've had sort of a large batch of problems ranging from really minor to potentially major involving the basketball team, and there'd been not much sort of sign that the school or the basketball program was saying, "Hey, these are issues we need to take care of." I think that's been the bigger issue.
It's kind of interesting because various coaches historically have been seen as good guys or running renegade programs. I would say absolutely Bill Self has had an excellent reputation. He's engaging with the media. He's actually, when asked, answering questions. And you mentioned some of the cases that are still pending. Is there any logic to, because of who he's been, he's not, you know, it seems like they haven't really turned the heat up on him as if it were, say, another coach who had more of a sour reputation?
Yeah, well, see, I think there is something to that. And I think, look, Bill has always been really good with the media. That's been his M.O., and I think a lot of people think it's who he is. He's pretty authentic in that, and I think he is. I think that's right. But I think, and frankly, you know, I had to ask him some tough questions in order to write that column on Saturday night from Stillwater, which is where they had just beaten Oklahoma State. And I think that, you know, it's instructive that he was pleasant, even as he disagreed with me and as we, you know, had kind of a little back and forth. He was pleasant the whole time and pleasant as we parted and everything else. Now, I don't know what he said about me in the locker room, but he's always been, you know, pleasant. And you kind of pegged it when you said, you know, he listens to questions and he answers them thoughtfully and things like that. And I do think, in answer to your question, that's built up, and I don't mean that this is why he's done that or been that way, but I think it's had the effect of building up a tremendous benefit of the doubt with some of the national guys who cover college basketball who might have popped him earlier on this stuff had he been a guy who's either A, sort of had a history of these kinds of issues with the team, or B, been not quite as good with the media or whatever else.
No, I think that's an excellent point as we continue with George Schroeder. From a basketball-only point of view, you were at Iba Arena, got to see him beat a pretty good Oklahoma State team. They're viewed as right now the top overall seed. So if you add that up, they're so history in the big tournament. As you wrote also, geography might be on their side. What do you like their chances for a deep run?
Well, I'm of two minds on that. I mean, I think this is a team that knows how to win, and they've played a bunch of close games and won them and cleared the Big 12, which is not as good as it was last year, but it's still a very deep league in terms of the fact that it's bad teams that aren't going to the tournament are better than other leagues' bad teams, I believe. And they cleared it by four games. I mean, they won the standings in the regular season by four games, which is unheard of even for them. That said, they're not very deep at all. I think they're really good. They go as far as Frank Mason, who's their senior guard, senior point guard, goes. And if Josh Jackson is having a good game, and he's had a bunch of good games, you know, he's a freshman 6'8", kind of a 2-3 kind of combo guard. And we'll see. And I've said this, you know, on your show before. I don't know who the favorite is. I don't have one. I think 7 or 8 teams, and I don't know that I'd expand that much further. I think 7 or 8 teams could win it. And, you know, the all 3 of the Pac-12 teams that everybody talks about could win it. North Carolina can win it. Kansas can win it. So that's 5. Villanova clearly can win it. Should have been higher in my, you know, in my little paragraph here. And that's 6. I think Duke can win it, has a talent to win it. You know, they haven't played very well lately. I think, you know, so there's 7, and I know I'm missing a couple here.
Sure.
Right? And I haven't mentioned Gonzaga, which I just have a healthy amount of skepticism about that until they get it done, until they get to a Final Four. But they're very talented. So in answer to your question, Kansas might be the number 1 overall seed. I don't know. But I don't know why I would say they've got a better shot at any one of those teams. I'm not sure they have as good a shot as some of those other teams I just mentioned.
No, and it's one of the reasons I can't wait for this thing to get started. We've talked about Kansas, the 13 straight Big 12 regular season titles. Gonzaga just made their conference final for the 20th year in a row. North Carolina at one point got to the Big Dance 27 times in a row, which included making the Sweet 16 13 times in a row. If you kind of had to do a ranking, those kinds of accomplishments, are they all just under the wow umbrella, or would you favor one over the other two?
Well, I mean, I think getting to the tournament is a really cool deal to be able to do that. However, you know, a lot of power conference teams get to the tournament every year. So, I mean, 27 years in a row says a ton. No question. I actually think winning 13 conference titles in a Power 5 conference in a row is an amazing feat because, look, it hadn't always been a great conference in every one of those 13 seasons, but by and large, it's had a bunch of good teams. It's always had 2 or 3 other good teams, and some years it's had another elite team or two. Now, you know, Kansas wasn't always elite when they won the league. To me, you know, that is really, really hard to do. I mean, that's – now, I get it. You know, Gonzaga's done something similar with the conference tournament finals and things like that, but let's not pretend like that's the same kind of league. And they've elevated themselves above the league. Kansas obviously has elevated itself above the Big 12 in that it wins the conference titles, but they've had a ton of really good teams in that time who have made deep runs in the NCAA tournament, thus validating how good they've been. You know, just a year ago, Kansas won the league and Oklahoma went to the Final Four.
Right.
You know, Iowa State has been really, really good at different times. Texas has been good at times. Baylor's been good in recent years. Oklahoma State has been good and bad, and now maybe they're good again. You know, I mean, there have been a bunch of good teams during that time, and none of them have taken down Kansas.
No, I think the interesting thing is actually the only team that really hasn't been a threat in basketball is TCU. So there's always been challenges. No, I just thought that it was kind of that's where we've been leaning.
They're all wows. They're all wows. I mean, yeah. I'm not trying to you know, talk down either the other two, but I just think the idea that in a Power 5 basketball conference where it's a, you know, there's some other good teams and some pretty good balance. I mean, we're not talking about – I mean, Kentucky hasn't done that in an SEC that hasn't had great teams besides Kentucky year in and year out, right?
Right.
We're not even talking about that kind of league where Kentucky is sort of head and shoulders above every year. We're talking about a league where – you know, they've got other teams most years that can, you know, represent pretty well. And to win that 13 years in a row is really good. And look, the Big 12 historically is not the ACC, you know, and it hasn't been the Big 10's down this year, but it hasn't been the Big 10 every year. But it's been a pretty good league. To win that 13 years in a row is really impressive to me.
No, it is. It's absolutely impressive. What, another March Madness question as we continue with George Schroeder of USA Today. The one-bid leagues, you know, last night Milwaukee could have won the Horizon and gotten in with 23 losses. I've heard, should a 3-day hot streak trump 3 months of excellence, whether it be the Horizon, the Colonial, or the Summit, is there any need to address this, or is it just like, come on, that's the deal. It's March Madness. If you get in and win your tournament, you go.
Well, here's the deal. There's two things. One, if the argument is that one bad night, on the other hand, one bad night, you know, for the top seed, which is had a great year, shouldn't mean that you don't get an at-large bid in many cases. Instead, sort of that mediocre record team from a Power 5 league gets in. If you want to make that argument, I'm all on board with having more at-larges who get upset in their conference tournaments. However, those leagues determine. I mean, if I'm okay with the team with 23 losses getting in because they won the conference tournament, that league knew the rules going in. They could have, and some leagues have done this in the past, they could have made their regular season champion their automatic entry. But instead, they decided to have a conference tournament and do it that way. Now, that I know why you do it as a league, because it preserves sort of, and to some extent, it's a moneymaker, but it preserves sort of the idea that everybody's got a shot and the season isn't in the tank when you're out of the running and the conference standings and all that kind of stuff. And that's really cool. And then sometimes somebody wins with 20 losses. But you knew the deal going in. You knew that was how it was going to be determined. It didn't matter that the other team went 18-0 in conference play or whatever. It doesn't matter. It's all about those 3 days. You knew the rules going in. You could have determined your automatic entry with the regular season champ, and you decided not to. So I don't have a whole lot of like, wow, that team with 23 losses that got on a 3-day hot streak shouldn't get in there. I mean, I'm good with that. That's how you decide to determine your champ.
Well, with a better 2 minutes down the stretch last night, we would have had that. As far as the majors, I consider it.
There's a reason that they lost that game down the stretch with those 2 minutes.
Yeah, apparently 23 other times they found a way to lose down the stretch. As far as the majors, I always consider it the Power Five plus the Big East. You know, you've got Oregon, Arizona, UCLA in the Pac-12, North Carolina in the ACC. You keep hearing if they win their conference tournament, that should get them a one seed. But then you have to consider, does that mean Villanova and Kansas are going to fall off the one line if they lose? Do the major conference tournaments have that kind of value? Or as simple as it sounds, it's just, you know, kind of different circumstances year to year?
Well, I mean, it's definitely different circumstances year to year. I mean, it all has to do with who the contenders are. I mean, there are some years you could lose in the, you know, you could, most of these guys get a bye into what, the semis or something like that. You could lose in the semis of your conference tournament and get to the final and you're still a one seed. I mean, there are some years that happens. There are other years when you could win it and somebody else could get on a hot streak and somehow you find yourself as the fifth overall seed and the top two and you thought you were a one, you know? So, I mean, there's no real way to know. I mean, I like bracketology as much as the next guy, and I look at ours, and I look at the ubiquitous Joe Lunardi, and I look at Stu Mandels, and I look at several other guys, you know, when you get closer to this time of year over the last few weeks, I look at them fairly often. But they're just guesses. Now, they're guesses based on bracketing principles and everything else. And they're interesting for, like, if this guy is this seed, this is where they'll go, and this is who they could be matched up against. But they're just flat guesses. And, you know, one guy doesn't – I mean, that's his opinion of how he would rank the teams. That's not, you know, the members of the committee who have been who are, you know, debating these teams in the room. And, by the way, they're doing it right now to a certain extent. They're already holed up in Indianapolis. they're debating these teams in the room, and they're – and they're, you know, ranking them and ordering them and then maybe going back and looking at them again and scrubbing the seed lines and doing all sorts of things and then applying the bracketing principles, which also come into play here. And so I say all that to say it's all just a flat guess. And then the teams that we think, oh, wow, they must have a number one seed sewn up, I don't think we really know that. I mean, a lot of times it ends up being the same four or five teams vying for those four spots, but every so often they throw us a curve and we realize they thought differently of this team, one, you know, either higher or lower than the rest of us thought.
Sure. Well, I hope they're getting a lot of ventilation in that room.
Well, I don't know that they have cigar smoke in there anymore, so I think it's okay.
Final.
I'll just say this. I think the Pac-12 champion, if it's one of those three teams, has a real good shot at a one, especially if it's Oregon.
Right. If the champ follows up by winning the title.
Right.
Yeah.
But I would say this. I think UCLA would have a shot at it, and I would think Arizona would have a shot as a one too. I think they could move up with, you know, and especially, by the way, one of those two teams would have a shot to move up because they would have beaten the other team.
Yep.
And then Oregon, presumably, unless Oregon got upset somewhere. But so, I mean, I think the Pac-12 champion, if it's one of the three teams we expect it to be, is probably the one.
I agree.
And probably out of the West, and I think Gonzaga probably is the two. Now, that's just one guy's flat guess, and he covers college football more than basketball. So take it for what it's worth.
All right. Speaking of a subject we don't talk about that often, and we'll wrap with this. Apparently, the Cowboys are going to cut Tony Romo, I was of the opinion with Dak Prescott making nothing, maybe keep Romo one more year. I mean, the bottom line is he's won two total playoff games. How would you evaluate his time as their starter? And was this kind of a move that they had to make for money?
I think it's a move they had to make to do right by him. I mean, what is he? How old is he now?
36, 37.
Yeah. So he could sit around. They could keep him around as insurance for another year, but he's losing a year that he has. And even if you don't play and you don't get banged up, you get a year older, you know? And so I think it's a move they made for him, frankly, as much as it is for them. So I think that's the first thing. Now, evaluating him as quarterback, I think he's been in the upper tier of quarterbacks for the majority of his career. And you're right, the playoff issue, but that goes a long way beyond Tony Romo. There was the time early in his career when he mishandled the snap on the or the you know on the
extra
PAT
point,
or the field goal,
Seattle.
Whatever it was. But other than that, he has been a really good quarterback for a long time, and I think their playoff issues are a much deeper situation than just him. I mean, you know, they've been a mediocre franchise for a lot of years, but he's made them better. And I think he's, you know, assuming that he's able to return and play at the level that he would have played at this year had he not been injured, and of course he's been injury prone, that'd be the one big knock. Then, you know, assuming he doesn't sort of have that, this is the year you fall off the cliff age-wise, then I think he gets to the right team, he's got a shot to sort of, you know, still be really, really good and one of the upper echelon quarterbacks. That's my thought of his career and where I think he is right now.
All right. By the way, for the record, in April he turns 37, so we were correct.
There you go. That's why you tune into the show, because we just sort of flat guess and we're right.
I wish I was right on most of my guesses. You can keep up with George, USAtoday.com, on Twitter, at George Schroeder. Enjoy. It's a lot of fun stuff happening, George. I look forward to catching up with you next week.
All right, I appreciate it. Shout out to the Sluggers.
Oh, yeah, we're getting to that time of year. Have a good
Sluggers,
one, George.
Sluggers unite.
The Sluggers, talking softball. You got to love it.